Blog Talk Radio.
The All About You show is brought to you in part by Vera Heart Coaching and Mindscape, the art of transformation.
Welcome to this week's edition of the All About You show. Today is Thursday, December 3rd. Who knew December could come so quickly in the year, right? So, Thursday, December 3rd, and I'm so excited, truthfully, very, very excited because of my huge interest in this field. We are going to be speaking with Barbara Lamb, and Barbara Lamb is probably one of the most interesting people you'll ever have an opportunity to listen to. It's her title is Barbara Lamb, MS, which is Master of Science. She's also a psychotherapist, a clinical hypnotherapist. She's a researcher, an author, and a lecturer. And Barbara, welcome to the All About You show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm really pleased to be with you.
Oh, I am so excited to talk with you. I really am. You and I share similar interests in hypnotherapy, and as a hypnotherapist myself, and you trained in regression therapy for several years during the 80s.
By the
Association for Past Life Research and Therapies, which is APRT, and you've taught workshops for regression therapies to train them in doing regression therapy with experiencers of ET contact. Now,
yes.
How in the world did that come about?
Well, it's something that I never had expected in a million years. Back in the mid-1970s, I became licensed as a psychotherapist and found that in my practice, I was doing quite a bit of what I at that time called deep relaxation work. And it was sort of helping people to get into a really deeply relaxed state. And eventually, people began to point out that I was doing hypnotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I was sort of surprised. And then I decided, well, maybe I better get some training in hypnotherapy if I'm doing it. You know,
maybe
know everything I can know about that. So I took a couple of hypnosis training courses. And then because of some interesting experiences that I had had, which I was calling spontaneous past life recalls,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking there should be some way that when you have memories of previous lifetimes, particularly if they seem to be meaningful to your life this time, that there
mm-hmm.
should be some way to use that therapeutically. And, of course,
right.
I was already a therapist, so that was a natural thing for me to think of. And then I discovered that there is this wonderful organization here in Southern California, where I am, and you mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, the Association for Past Life Research and Therapies. And I met the woman who had founded that and was very impressed with the sound of it. So I went to their conference and was terrifically impressed with the therapists who were doing really excellent work in part
mm-hmm.
of their practices anyway, in regressing people back to previous lifetimes and then clearing up any problems that may have carried over from a previous lifetime into
mm-hmm.
this lifetime. So
right.
I decided, okay, I really like this and seems to suit me very well. So I had 5 years of training in that work, and the very last module of training, and a module usually lasted either 5 days or 7 days, and evenings,
mm-hmm.
it was very intense. And the very last
right.
module, which I believe was in 1988, the trainer, a therapist woman whom I respected very highly, mentioned and this was the first time I'd ever heard of such a thing, she said, those of you who are doing regression therapy need to know that sometime it could happen that somebody will come to you who will be complaining of having been visited by some very unusual sorts of beings and who don't seem to be human, and that they might be taken away for an hour or two and then returned, and sometimes they're very confused or distressed or even traumatized, and that you just need to know, those of you who are doing regression therapy, that that could come to you sometime. So I was really surprised to hear that. And even more than that, there was a big voice right then, a big voice in my head saying, and it wasn't my voice, saying, pay attention to this, Barbara. You will be doing this. In other words, I'd be eventually, regressing people to these very unusual experiences. So I didn't know at that time, 1988, if any of that was real. And, you know, this was the first time I was hearing about it. So I didn't consciously plan it, but I found myself when I was out doing errands for the next 3 years, I found myself going to bookstores and libraries and magazine shops, which we used to have in each town around here.
Sure.
I don't think we do anymore, but
I don't think we do either.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Those were really wonderful places.
I
lots
know.
Of interesting resources. And I was looking for magazines that might have anything about UFOs or extraterrestrials. So it was sort of building my interest and thinking that, well, I should be at least a little bit prepared for this in case anybody ever comes to me for this sort of purpose. And then by 1991, so about 3 years later, I noticed that in the shower one morning, which is a good thinking time for me, but not interrupted.
You and me both.
Yeah. It's a great time, almost like a meditation. Anyway, I was thinking to myself, I think that I do believe that this is true, this sort of thing. And if anybody does come to me, I think I could really manage that because I had done, a few years by that, several years of regression therapy work. So I thought, I think I could figure out a way to apply this to people who've been having these very unusual experiences. Well, Karen, as synchronicity has it, 2 hours after thinking that in the shower, I was at a metaphysical bookstore in the town next to mine, and the woman behind the counter said, aren't you Barbara Lamb? Don't you do regression therapy? And I said, yes, I am, and I do that work. And she asked me to work with her 21-year-old daughter, who was highly, highly distressed and even traumatized because she was being visited in the night very frequently by some very odd beings who were obviously not human, but they were standing on 2 legs, 2 feet, and so forth. They had 2 arms.
Right.
And she was so frightened about them. She had not heard anything about them, and she was just terrified. And so she was insisting on sleeping between her mother and her father every night in their bed. And with her being a 21-year-old young woman, they were getting kind of fed up with that after a couple of years of this. And they said, boy, we've got to find some help for her. I mean, this is not okay. So I did agree to work with her. And so that was in 1991. And she was my first person who came for extraterrestrial encounter purposes. And we did 6 regressions, and each one to a different kind of extraterrestrial encounter with different kinds of beings. And we learned a lot, got a lot of details. And it seemed to be, with each regression, that she was feeling a little bit more relaxed about the whole thing.
Right.
Maybe it was because she was getting used to it, or she knew that she had my support, and I was remaining very calm about the whole thing and taking in everything with great fascination, everything that was coming out of the regressions. But I think that my calmness and my attempt to treat it as sort of a normal phenomenon, even though it was new to me and not really normal at that point, you know, I think that that helped. And she had also, on one occasion, after I had worked with her 6 times, she had been driving along with her sister in her own town here in Southern California, and they noticed that there was a blue beam of light coming in through the back windshield of the car, and it seemed to be following them for a couple of miles, and it seemed to be getting closer. So, and then the motor of the car started to sort of peter out, so they pulled off the road and jumped out of the car, and feeling frightened, and they happened to be in a nice big open field right there, and they ran across the field, and my client, this 21-year-old woman, she had had a painful lower back condition for quite a while and hadn't been able to get any help for it. But this blue beam of light followed her across the field as she was running, and it touched her in the lower back where she'd had all this pain, and to her surprise, it felt so good. So she stopped running. Her sister kept on running, but she stopped to just continue receiving this very warm, effervescent feeling of the blue beam of light hitting her lower back. And she realized after a minute or so that, oh, all that pain that she had had for months was disappearing. And then it was completely gone. So the girls got back in the car, and the car started up again. The blue beam retreated, and the disc-shaped object that it had come down from in the sky, not terribly high above them, that flew away, and they went on their way with the car working perfectly fine. So when she came in for her last session, still in 1991, she looked happy and relaxed and radiant, and she said, I'm okay with all of this now. In fact, I feel privileged. I feel honored that whoever these beings are, that they have chosen me to visit. And they had actually healed her on one occasion that we found out through a regression. They had healed her in her own bed at night when she had had a very bad ear infection. And we went through the regression moment by moment, and there were these beings, very tall, thin, white beings, and they rolled her over on her side so that the infected ear was on the upper side. And they did some work with her ear. They did some instrumental work of some sort in there, and then also she felt a really warm, healing energy from them. And when she woke up in the morning, of course, the beings were gone, but her ear was completely better. So when we put these things together, that these beings may be very strange, they may be frightening at first, and certainly mysterious and disturbing to have encounters with in the middle of the night when you don't expect something like that. But on the other hand, these beings were really helping her.
Right.
So on that last visit, she announced that she and her boyfriend were going to move from her parents' house, and they were going to move out into what is pretty much a wilderness area near our towns in the foothills of the mountains in back
okay.
of us. And I said, well, you know, you may very well get some more visits there. They seem to like to visit people in wilderness areas as well as in regular town neighborhoods such as where she'd been all these years. And she said,
right.
I know. She said, that's okay. And if they come again, I will welcome them. And she had convinced her boyfriend to be comfortable about the whole thing. In fact, he was getting quite interested and hoped that he would be able to see them or maybe even
right.
meet them as well. So that was my beginning of working with extraterrestrial experiencers. I like to call them experiencers rather than abductees or contactees, because so many of the people I've worked with have had experiences that they do not particularly like or welcome with certain kinds of beings, but they've also had very enlightening, spiritually upraising, positive experiences with some others of these extraterrestrial beings. So I like to call them all experiencers.
That's
and
a phenomenal story.
Yeah, I know. That was the beginning. So that was in the spring of 1991. And then I thought, after working with her, I thought, well, okay, if it should happen that anyone else would just happen to come along, I wasn't advertising or doing anything public in any way about having done that work with her.
Uh-huh.
But I just thought, well, if it just happens, somebody else will come. I feel really good about working with that. I feel that I can be helpful, and that's the whole reason to be a therapist in the first place, is to be as helpful as you can to somebody, whatever the condition is that they're working with. And
right.
so about 4 months later, another woman came who had been having these mysterious experiences, and she worked with me very frequently for 11 years, which means
wow.
we had, probably 60 or 65 regressions, and we had many other sessions where we just had discussions and integrating all of this and trying to make sense of it. And then after she came, this was still in later 1991, then a couple of other people, I don't know how, but they heard of me and that I did this work. And so it's just gained momentum. And by now, all of these years later, in December 2015, I have worked with, I have worked with at least 1,700 individuals doing regressions to their extraterrestrial encounters. And some of those people have been able to come many times because they live close enough, and they come maybe every few months or so. And so it's many more regressions to
right.
ET experiences than people. So I would say that there are at least 2,400 regressions I've done by now to people's extraterrestrial encounters. And it has been fascinating. And
yes.
the main thing, it's been very helpful for those people, helpful for them to know the details. And I think that everybody I have regressed, of all that 1,700 or perhaps a few more, that they very often came in feeling confused, which is certainly understandable, and in many cases very frightened. And they come in because they're sort of haunted by little bits and pieces of the experience that they remember usually at the very beginning of an experience or at the very end when they're returned, and then they don't know anything about the main body of the experience. And it's easy for us, when something is unknown, to feel very fearful about it. And I certainly understand that. And usually they feel a considerable sense of relief once they've done the regression and we can talk about it and debrief it, integrate it, and they realize that, of course, they've survived the experience and they're perfectly all right, and that there were even some very interesting things or some very positive things that have happened in many of those encounters. So it's really been a wonderful part of my work that I had never, ever expected that I would be doing. But I feel so pleased and so privileged and grateful that I am doing this work, and I do continue and will continue to
right.
do this work.
Yes, I'm glad that there's somebody out there like you to do this work. I am personally fascinated in my own work doing past life regression or regression therapy. It's one of my most beloved things to do as a hypnotherapist,
mm-hmm.
and it's very sacred
yes.
space. And I so want yes. And I so want to get into doing what you are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a call on the line. And if anybody wants to call in, we have more to hear from Barbara. But if anybody else wants to call in, the guest call-in number is area code 657-383-0081. And let's see if we can pull up our caller here. And thank you for holding, caller. You're live on the All About You show with Barbara Lamb.
Hello?
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Barbara, what would be the difference in a past life regression with the people who are traumatized by their experiences compared to maybe people who don't have that type of trauma, or is that just that they're just burying it deeper?
Well, are you asking, I'm not quite sure what you're really asking, are you asking why some people are traumatized by their extraterrestrial encounters and some people are not traumatized?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Well, boy, there probably are 1,000 different answers or possibilities to that. Some people, when the visitors come, and it's not always in the middle of the night, sometimes it's in the daytime, but sometimes when they come, the person recognizes that there is a nice feeling somehow about that being who comes. And sometimes the beings are glowing, like with a spiritual light emanating from them. Or sometimes mm-hmm. they just feel very kindly or very gentle. And so the person is startled. I think there's always that. You know, if you're suddenly visited by some, you don't expect anybody to be there. And suddenly there is somebody there. I mean, that's unnerving and startling, I would think, to all of us. It would be for me, for sure. And but sometimes there's sort of a nice feeling or a very pleasant light, not only around the being, but filling the room, or there are sparkles of light sort of spiraling around. It has sort of a pleasant connotation. And in cases like that, the person usually says, this seems like a very kindly sort of being, and I'm startled and surprised and confused, but I don't really mind being with this one. So that's one thing. Whereas other people might have a being suddenly appear and they don't get that glowing look to the being, or they don't feel that nice feeling, and they may be feeling more of a foreboding because it's not that these beings look evil or anything, but they certainly do look different. And particularly if a person hasn't even known that there is such a thing as extraterrestrial beings, and then one of them or two or three of them show up in the room at night, I mean, you can really appreciate why they would be not only startled but frightened and confused and, oh, what is this, and what's going to happen? So I think it's fortunate that some people just pick up on the friendly, safe, positive aspect of some of these beings. But I will say that even with people I have regressed who had more of the frightening kinds of visits, in other words, there are these beings suddenly in the room and they look very different than we do. Very often they have very big eyes, and sometimes they're completely black eyes, and that can be kind of unnerving to us, being so different than we are. But as they get into the regression, they may still be quite frightened for a while. But after a while, in the regression, in other words, in the reliving of the experience, they seem to calm down. And when I'm regressing somebody, and let's say somebody is on a medical type of table and they're being examined by these beings, I have found that it helps if I will direct that person's attention to really looking at the beings and finding out as much as they can about those beings around them and whatever they're doing. And I have found that they can even ask questions of the beings, like, why did you choose me, or what are you doing, or what is this all about? And that they actually get answers from the beings. It's always done telepathically, so they hear the answers in their minds. And it all begins to make more sense and becomes more acceptable to be having that experience.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's answered your question. Do you have a further question on that?
Well, no, I was just curious because I know when I've had experiences, I don't seem to be traumatized, but I have never seen what other people see. And so when it happens to me, it's very, it doesn't seem to, it just has never traumatized me.
Oh, that's
and
very good.
I generally see the beings like in like these monk robes. So I have never seen anyone, I don't recall, and I've been through some past life regression, I don't recall ever seeing a gray or anything else. And I think seen a blue avian in my room. I find it that some people are just so horribly traumatized by it that I know there are other people that, you know, that aren't. And so
I know. Yeah. Well, it may have something to do with the person himself or herself. Some people are more easily scared and frightened by things, and some people are not so much anyway across the board. Some people are very interested in this subject. You know, they've heard about it from other people or other programs, or they've read some things, and they are more interested in it. I think the more interested a person is, the less fearful they are about it. And then, of course, as I was saying earlier, some of these beings come with such a wonderful sense of goodness, even love, sort of radiating unconditional love, that the person, of course, is very surprised, maybe confused, but they kind of like that kind of being. And some of the beings seem to be more matter-of-fact and almost mechanical in a way, and very determined to just do what they came to do. And, you know, people don't warm up to that type. I can certainly see the difference there, see why. So I want to say right away, too, that there are many different kinds of extraterrestrial beings that come and interact with humans, either right there where the human is, or they will remove the human, take them to a craft, or at least it certainly seems like it's a craft that they're being taken to. And so a whole variety of experiences can happen. There's been a tremendous amount of publicity about the little gray beings, and those are the ones I believe people tend to be more afraid of than most of the others. And they don't seem to have empathy or compassion. They don't seem to be beings that you could really relate to or who would be caring about you in any way. So those beings have gotten tremendous publicity, and a lot of the really wonderful, loving extraterrestrial beings that do come also, they have not, I think, been talked about so much. So that I think when people think of aliens or think of extraterrestrials, they tend to think of those that are received more negatively, those who seem to be more intent on just doing whatever they have come to do. They're more self-serving, we could say. But I'm very, very glad that you have not had the fear and that you seem to be doing well with your experiences. And I'm very glad that you called in to mention that, because that's very important for other people to know, you know, that it doesn't have to be a horrible, frightening experience. So thank you very much for that.
Do you think there's like with some abductees or some experiencers, do you think there is some familiarity between the person and the entity, or do you think that most of the people have no familiarity when this happens to them?
Oh, boy, that is a great question you're asking. Many people, when they're approached by one of these beings, at first, of course, they go through the initial surprise, oh, my goodness. But very early into the experience, they often will realize that, oh, they recognize this being, that they've been with this being before. And when that comes up in regression, then I will typically say, would you like to revisit one of those experiences before when you were with this being? And sometimes they do want to do that. We'll go back to an earlier experience. And very often it turns out that even though a person might be aware of one recent experience, in other words, during their adult years, that once we get into the regression, and particularly if they kind of recognize one of the beings or some of the beings, and they'll think, yo, this is really familiar. Oh, yeah, I remember when one of these came to me when I was about 3 years old. And then if the person wants to, we'll go back in the regression to that experience and then pick up the adult experience after that. So, yeah, your question is really good, because a lot of these beings will follow one person through that person's lifetime, beginning very, very early in the person's life. In fact, one of my most memorable cases was working with a man, quite a number of times. We probably had 12 or 13 or so regressions, and he started having his extraterrestrial encounters when he was still a fetus in his mother's womb. Yeah, that was most fascinating. And that being came to him when he was in his mother's womb and said to him, as a fetus, said, "I am here because you have a serious problem. And if you are born without my helping you with this problem, you will not be able to live. You have a congenital hole in your heart, and it will not sustain will not contain the blood unless I help you." So the being continued to say, a male being, he said, "I am putting an invisible magnetic strip over the hole in your heart." So in other words, he was doing this through the mother's womb and into the uterus, you know, and into the fetus. And so that baby was born, and he had this invisible electromagnetic strip over the hole in his heart. So he grew up, and eventually, and we did a lot of regressions to different ages of his childhood. And every time that he was taken on board again, this very same being, who was about 5'7" and had big eyes, but they were unusual eyes. They had sort of different angles, like cut glass pieces have different facets and angles. He called them the man with the beveled eyes. And he was definitely, he called him a man, but he was definitely extraterrestrial. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of gray, but he was about 5'7". And he had a name for that man, too, Mazu. And he said every time he was taken, according to our regressions, Mazu would greet him, and he would be put on an examining table. And Mazu would refurbish or, like, strengthen or replace, in some cases, that electromagnetic strip over the hole in his heart.
Wow.
So this man grew up to be a big, strong, 6'4" man who did physical labor for his work and carrying very heavy equipment every day and doing very, very well. And then at about age 48, it was detected, but he lived all those years and a very vigorous life too. And at age 48, it was detected that he had a heart problem. And he was taken to the hospital and taken into surgery. And his wife happened to be a surgical nurse. So she got permission to be there, not to be one of the nurses attending to him, but to be there to observe it, since she was a nurse anyway. And so she testified that when the surgeon opened him up to look at his heart, the surgeon exclaimed, "Oh, this man has a hole in his heart the size of a silver dollar. I don't know how he can still be living." And so at that point, there seemed to be a little bit of blood leaking, but here was the invisible, and that's a very key word here, invisible electromagnetic strip over the hole in his heart, so the doctor didn't see that strip, that covering. And he did repair the heart in the regular way that our doctors do that with fellow human beings. And that man lived several more years, during which time I was able to do this work with him. So, I mean, that, you know, was a wonderful, wonderful thing to learn about the ongoing caring of that being and how
right.
he continued
right.
to help that boy, and then as he became a man, through his manhood.
And you
that's
think
a phenomenal story. Sorry, I'm sorry, caller. I was just going to say that's a phenomenal story, Barbara. Did I hear you correctly at the beginning? When you do regression therapy, do these beings stay with people from lifetime to lifetime in some cases?
Well, that does happen too. But first of all, I think I'd like to say that one being or a group of beings very often, or most often, I think, seems to stay with a human being and do many encounter experiences throughout the lifetime. And so people who, it's very, very typical, happens a lot in my experience with this, that a person will come in during adulthood and say, oh, 6 months ago or last week or 2 years ago or whenever, this strange thing happened. And that might be the first conscious recollection of a visit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they will want to find out about it, and we'll do the regression. And then, either during the regression or sometimes after the regression, and they've gone home again, they'll begin to realize, oh, that's what used to happen to me as a child when I'd wake up and notice, you know, other beings in my room, and my parents said, oh, they were just imaginary beings, you know, or that's what happened when I was on my way home from school in the sixth grade, and I didn't get home until a couple of hours after I should have, and my parents were mad at me because I didn't come right home, and I couldn't explain where I had been. In other words, they had been taken and
right.
then returned a couple of hours later. And there are lots and lots of people who, you know, lived with these peculiar things from early childhood right on up through whenever they come to me as an adult. And they're just these things they don't understand. And, you know, that's certainly understandable that they don't understand. And but they're peculiar, but nobody has any explanation for it. And parents don't know what to do about it. You can't blame them. They just don't know about it. And so they just kind of tuck it into the back of their minds. But then when they begin to really look into it, some of those earlier peculiar experiences begin to make sense. They begin to think, oh, that's what that was. I've had lots of people come to me and actually remember being young enough to still be in the crib and looking through the bars of the crib or looking upward and seeing a being peering over the crib and then reaching down to scoop them up, or beings coming out of the closet or coming through, excuse me, coming through the wall or coming through the closed window. And, of course, at the time, it didn't make sense. And the parents who didn't know about this would say, oh, it must have been a vivid dream, or lots of children have imaginary friends. That's what it must be, or you must have a vivid imagination. And, you know, we can't really fault them because they just didn't know about this.
Right.
So
right.
It's a relief, I have found, when people come for regression as an adult, and then they look back on these early experiences that they've had in their early years and put the pieces together. It's almost like putting together a picture puzzle. And then, oh, a lot of those things come flooding back into their memories, and they think, oh, that's what it must have been. I've been having these experiences all of my life, and I didn't even know it.
Wow.
So this is a very common thing for people who nowadays know that they're having experiences.
Right.
And it does seem to be a lifelong experience. If somebody's having experiences now, as far as I can see so far, they most likely have had them all of their life, whether they knew it or not.
Right.
And I think that this is an important point, because a lot of people whom I know who are not involved in this work, but they hear about it elsewhere, or perhaps from me talking about it, and they'll say, well, does that mean that I could just be visited anytime, or I could be picked up sometime if I'm driving out on a country road? And I say, no, I don't think so. It doesn't look to me like it's that random a thing, you know, that you could just be a hapless victim in the wrong place at the wrong time. Rather, I think from all of the situations I know, there's been that background to it. There have been those earlier contact experiences, whether the person is really particularly aware of it or not. So I don't think people need to go thinking, oh, that's one of the other things I have to worry about, is, you know, being picked up by an alien. So if you haven't had those experiences, I think you most likely, as far as I know, you won't be having them.
All right. Excuse me, Barbara, just one moment. Caller, did you have another question for Barbara? Or if you'd like, I can put you in the room where you can continue to listen to the conversation.
No, I listen to the conversation. I'm sure you have a lot of other callers.
All right, well, we're going to put you, I'm going to put you, no, not at the moment, but we have about 40 minutes left to go, and we got a lot of ground to cover. Barbara's life is absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So let me just put you in the green room, and you can continue to listen, okay?
Thank you.
All right.
And thank you, caller.
Thank you very much, Barbara.
Great questions.
You're welcome.
Great questions. Absolutely.
They were good. I'm very pleased for them. Mm-hmm.
Right. Very good questions. Now, so if, you know, it's not necessarily, or it's not random at all, even though what one would think of as an experience is, they would think it's random, but not, it's not necessarily random.
It probably
something that's been
isn't.
Happening. Right, okay. Something that's been going on like their whole entire life. Like the gentleman, I'm trying to remember the name of the movie. His name escapes me. Yeah, Fire in the Sky?
Yeah,
okay, so he had been taken his whole life? That wasn't random that day out there in the woods, you think?
Well, I don't think Travis really knows about that. I've met him at lots of conferences where we're both speakers and had lots of short conversations with him. I don't think he thinks that he was taken earlier. I think there is some hint that he may have been visited and taken again since that experience in the woods. Years ago, but I don't know, because I haven't really worked with him, and so I'm just going on some short conversations.
Right, that would be interesting for me to find out, you know, and I can totally understand why somebody would be traumatized, because, you know, I know that there's X amount of percentage of people in the population that believe in that we're not the only, you know, life form in this galaxy or any other. But it's not something that you are expecting to experience, you know, even though more people do not believe in it. I can understand when it happens, why it would be, when you're first recalling it, that it would be a traumatic experience, because it's like, you know, it's like falling down the rabbit hole. It's like, oh my gosh, they're here, you know, and we aren't alone. Yeah, absolutely. What about hybrids? Yeah. Have you run across any hybrids at all in your career?
Oh, thank you so much for asking that. Yes, well, first of all, for years, I was doing regressions with women and also with some men who had reproductive material taken from them during these extraterrestrial encounters. Women would have eggs taken from their ovaries, and men would have sperm taken in some of these encounters by some of the beings. Seems that some of these extraterrestrial beings are definitely involved in a reproductive program and are producing hybrids. And it also seems like many of the other kinds of extraterrestrial beings have nothing to do with creating hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want people to get the impression that all extraterrestrials are producing hybrids, because I'm convinced that that is not the case. But anyway, there are some types, some of the small gray types, some of the reptilian types, and a few other types that we don't really characterize particularly with a name like that. Some of them certainly appear to be doing a hybridization program, producing offspring that are part human and part whatever their race of extraterrestrial is.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, I believe, at least the ones that I've come across, that those hybrids, if they're half human and half extraterrestrial, that they're not human enough to really survive here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they live their life on the ship, the UFO, with that group of beings. Or, in some cases, they might live on the planet that those beings come from. So then there seems to be an intergenerational program. Well, first of all, going back a half a step here, the woman or even teenage girl who had eggs removed from her ovaries for this reproduction program, and teenage boys or men who had sperm removed, they very often would find in some of their encounters that they were shown the hybrid babies being gestated in glass tanks, or hybrid babies who've been quote-unquote born, removed, you know, at full maturation point from those tanks and wrapped in swaddling clothes and kept in little compartments with a glass door so the beings can make sure they're okay. And then many people who've had the reproductive material used for this purpose, they will be taken to see a hybrid baby and hold the baby, or when the baby gets older, they'll be taken to visit the hybrid toddler, and then later when the child is a little bit older, and maybe throughout the years of their having these encounter experiences, they'll see the hybrid child or children, if they have more than one, as they're growing up. But those hybrids remain on the ship. But in recent years, starting about 6 years or so ago, I began to realize that there are hybrid people living here on planet Earth. And they're looking like regular people. The first one I met was a wonderful, wonderful woman named Cynthia Crawford, And I believe you, Karen, know her too.
I do. I love her to death. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so do I. And I met Cynthia at a conference, and she was standing next to me. We were doing something at the same table, and I looked over at her, and she looked at me, and I saw these beautiful big eyes, and I was really startled and in a pleasant way. And I said, "Oh!" And she said, "What?" You know, because she saw me sort of slightly gasp when I looked at her. And so she said, "What?" And I said, "Well, I hope you don't mind my saying this, but you remind me of a hybrid." And she smiled and said, "I am a hybrid." So that began a wonderful friendship with this excellent woman who is, we totally trust, a hybrid woman, human, mixed with about at least three different species of extraterrestrials. And she certainly lives here as a human, is recognized as a human, except that I recognized her as something else. I just this great flash of intuition, I guess, that
right.
every one of us probably has once in a while.
Sure.
And anyway, she's here for very benevolent purposes, very benevolent services to help people, help humans, particularly those who are what we call star children or star seed adults, who are here to sort of make a bridge between humans and the friendly extraterrestrials. And
right.
she's here helping people to who are that way to recognize, you know, who they are, and that they are really here for helpful service to humanity and
mm-hmm.
to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So that got my interest going and wondering if there were other hybrids who lived on Earth. Surely she couldn't be the only one. And then about 2 years later, at another UFO conference, a friend brought over a woman to meet me. And when I first looked at her, I did a double take. And she said, "What?" Seeing the surprised expression on my face. And I said, "Well, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but you remind me of a mantis being." And she leaned forward and said, "Good for you. I am a mantis being." Mantis is one of the species of extraterrestrial beings, and they're like very tall, praying mantis beings. That's
yeah,
what they
very
remind
beautiful.
Us of.
Right.
And
yeah,
they're
very
wonderful.
Beautiful insect. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and very tall. It might be 7 or 8 feet tall. Huge eyes, the biggest eyes of all that I've heard of. And any people who've met with mantis beings in the regressions that I have conducted, those mantis beings turn out to be really nice beings and
mm-hmm.
Helpful. And in many cases, they're described as unconditionally loving beings.
Mm-hmm.
So here is this woman I was just meeting for the first time, and she was affirming that she was a mantis being. So I made a point of getting to know her. We had lunch together right after that meeting. And then, a year or so later, she actually came across the U.S. She's on the East Coast and I'm on the West Coast. And she came and stayed about 6 days with me. And we went to a conference together and had many different experiences together. And all the while that she was here, I was so interested in just observing how she responded to things and how incredibly tuned in to nature she was. The things that she noticed in my backyard, my back garden, that I didn't even see even though I've been here in this back garden for many years. And, and I also saw her talking telepathically, or receiving, I should say, receiving telepathic information from dogs who were being walked on leash in my village. And and she was accurate. Like, she'd get a whole reading about that dog's life and where the dog was, particularly if it was a rescue dog, what his life was like before he came to the current owner.
Wow.
And then we'd check it out with the owner, and he'd say, "Wow, how did you know that? That's amazingly accurate." So I realized she's very intuitive, very insightful. She can communicate with the animals. She's very psychic, very spiritual. So that increased my interest in hybrids even more. And since then, I've met probably 12 additional people whom I trust are ET human hybrids, and all of them are here for helpfulness, for benevolent purposes.
Right.
So I was very, very interested in this and thinking, oh gosh, someday I should write another book, this time about hybrids. But I was just not finding the time. I have a very busy, fascinating life, and I just didn't know when I'd ever get the time to do it. But last spring, a wonderful man who's already a published writer 5 times and a researcher, a young man named Miguel Mendonca, who lives in England, he found me on YouTube, I suppose, and then looked up my website and realized that I did a lot of work with the hybrids and had already given a couple of very major lectures on hybrids, including hybrids who live here on Earth. And he contacted me, and we had quite a few talks, and then it resulted in our collaborating on a book, which we have just finished.
Called And when
Meet
is that going to be available?
Hybrid. Well, we think that will actually be printed and available in December this month, probably in time for Christmas.
Perfect. And what's the name of that book?
The name is Meet the Hybrids by Miguel Mendonca and myself, Barbara Lamb. So in this book, by the way, that will be able to be ordered through Amazon.com, and it will be able to be offered if somebody wants a signed copy, signed by me, anyway.
I would love one of those.
Okay.
I'll put my order in right now.
Okay. I always put in a nice little message to the person, too, as well as my signature. And because I like to receive books like that myself from other authors. And, so for this book, we have 8 hybrid people who live here perfectly well on Earth and are doing wonderful, benevolent services. One of them is Cynthia Crawford, the woman I mentioned a few minutes ago, who's an ET human hybrid. And they all are, and they all are a mixture of various species. Some of the species are Arcturians and beings from Sirius B planet. Some are tall white zetas. Some are reptilians. And that's worth mentioning because a lot of people have a very negative impression about reptilian extraterrestrial beings. And there are some who are not as likable, for sure, but there are, I think, many different species of reptilians, and some of them are really excellent. They're very high-minded, they're spiritually oriented, and they're really wonderful beings. So two of our hybrids have a good proportion of reptilian in them, and even that influence helps them to be here for total benevolence and total service. So they all
right.
feel that they're here for a purpose to help to upgrade humanity and help us to be more spiritually aware. And they also are serving as bridges between the extraterrestrial species and the human species. They all, in their own way, without having conferred with each other, they all emphasize that we are all one. They even
right.
use a capital letter for one. We are one with all the beings in the universe. The universe is full of extraterrestrial, highly intelligent beings. Some of them are more matter of fact. Some of them, as I mentioned earlier, are more serving of themselves. They just want to conduct their own business for their own purposes. But some are really benevolent and serve as very high-minded spiritual teachers. And it happens that the ones that we got to know for the purpose of this book are in that category, the highly spiritually oriented and service-oriented beings. So
right.
they're all here doing healing work, including remote healing, and they're all teaching classes, and they're teaching healing skills. They're teaching about spirituality, about energy work, and raising our frequencies. They also talk about the huge process going on slowly, the process of ascension, and that is that we're all, those who are choosing to, are evolving from just three-dimensional human beings, revolving into the fifth dimension of consciousness, where we're
right.
much more spiritually oriented, and they each have their own particular take on that process, but there's tremendous agreement between them, as it turns out. So Miguel Mendanza and I are aware that, well, we know these eight hybrids. I know three others whom we just, for various reasons, didn't include in the book. We might write a second book. And we have a feeling that after this book comes out, we'll be introduced to quite a number of other hybrids who are living here.
Oh,
and
sure.
We think that they're not only living in the United States, but they're probably living all over the world, just like the extraterrestrial encounters are happening worldwide. This is not just a U.S. phenomenon.
Oh, sure.
So there's a lot going on in the world, and many of your listeners have probably also heard of the star children. But there are lots of little children who are with us now here on Earth, been born to regular parents, but they're special kids, and they're here for enlightening others too. Even though they're young children, they're very psychic, they're very perceptive, they can talk telepathically, they too have contact with the beings that they may have originally come from, even if it's in previous lifetimes.
Right.
One of the things that's been very apparent to me in all of this work is that many of us humans, unbeknownst to us until recently, have had previous lifetimes as extraterrestrials. And we may have had many, many lifetimes that we, most of us probably don't know about yet. We may have had many, many lifetimes as a particular species of extraterrestrials. And some people, at least a few clients that I know who've come to me for considerable regression work, they have realized that in previous lifetimes they were one particular species of extraterrestrials, and then in subsequent lifetimes, still before this one, of course, they incarnated as another species of extraterrestrials. And so this brings up the question to me, what happens after we physically die? Well, what I've been finding out about some of these other species of extraterrestrials is that they too have souls. They too go into a spirit realm, and they, after they die, like we do, and it might even be the same dimension, frequency, realm, whatever we were to want to call on it, heaven, some people would use that word. They may even be in that same realm of being without a body, but as a conscious soul, that we go to, and that we can even get to know them if we're looking out for them, if we wish to. So that's something that I personally find myself looking forward to after I leave this lifetime, which I hope won't be too soon, but that I look forward to the great adventures in that other realm, being a conscious being without a body. And I look forward to exploring around and getting to know some of these extraterrestrial souls, which have been told will be possible.
Well, is it, I know when I do regression work with people, we go into, you know, the spirit realm, and I always ask for permission to speak with, you know, the oversoul to find out the importance of this life that they were just taken to, and the relevancy into their current life. And,
That's very good work. Yeah.
Yeah, and then to find, and then to see what it is that happens up in spirit realm, and the sometimes the reconnection of soul families that are together. Yeah, and it's been that for me personally is as I had said earlier, is very sacred space. But my
Absolutely.
Most favorite thing to happen, you know, is to find out, you know, everybody fears death, and I have zero fear. You know, I don't want to go today or tomorrow, you know,
right.
But when the time comes, I'm going to be like, yippee-ki-yay, let's go, because, you know.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, it is so vastly different when you are free of the physical body, you know, in which, you know, we're here. Earth is it's a learning, it's a school, and this plane, I feel. And when you're unencumbered of your physical form, and you go back to where you originated from, that it's just like, from what I understand in my years of doing it, it's like, you know, reconnecting with, you know, people who have been important to you throughout your lifetimes, you know, and sometimes, you know, you have
this lifetime.
Right. Maybe your parent was a brother or a sister in another lifetime, or maybe you were friends, or, you know, people with you then that are with you now, and what are the role differences and things like that. And it's just mind-boggling to me, and it is
oh,
one of
yes.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, it's just fascinating. So fascinating to me. And I cannot get enough of that type. That's like an addiction, you know, because wouldn't you agree? Because it's like when I've had grown men sit in my chair and cry because it was the very first time in their life that they actually physically experienced and truly, truly at the heart level understood what unconditional love meant and what it is. And it's just
what a blessing.
It's phenomenal. Phenomenal. And
well, you and I are very, very fortunate that, and I'm so grateful for it too, that we have the privilege of doing this work with people and learning about it. I mean, my learning has been just phenomenal with all this. And and I think, you know, these are parts of reality. This is just, what we're talking about is just as real as the three-dimensional world is real, and including these other beings. And yet, it seems like most humanity doesn't even know about this or doesn't even want to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
We're perfectly intelligent people just don't know or don't even want to talk about it, don't want to particularly think about it. I mean, there are many who do, fortunately, but it just seems like the vast mass of people, of humanity on Earth, are just not paying attention to that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've probably heard the same thing about, well, I don't believe in, you know, past life, and, you know, you don't even have to believe in it to experience it, you know.
Well, that's right. Oh, that is right. There was this wonderful psychiatrist in Miami, Florida. Oh, gosh, this was back in the late 1980s, I think, Dr. Brian Weiss, who was a regular psychiatrist doing wonderful work. He had impeccable credentials. You know, he graduated from all the wonderful colleges and medical schools and did his internship in the most fantastic hospital learning centers and had a very good practice going. And there was a client that he just could not get her out of her phobia that she had. And just one day, in desperation, he'd been working with her quite a while, he said, well, why don't you go back to the very beginning of where this problem started, thinking that she'd probably go back to sometime early in childhood. But lo and behold, she went back into what certainly seemed, it must have been, a previous lifetime. And she lived through some situations there that had been very traumatic, and she brought that trauma back over with her, her soul did, into this lifetime. And after that session, she was completely cleared of his problem, of her problem. So he began to realize, wow, he hadn't even thought about past lives before that. He didn't consider that as a reality at all. But but then he began to think, gee, you know, maybe we really do have more than one life. And he began to explore this with other patients. And lo and behold, he became a devotee to this past life work and was teaching many other psychiatrists, wrote a couple of excellent books about it, and, you know, brought that into public awareness more. And he, too, I've met him at conferences, and a lovely man. And he, like what we are saying, you and I, Karen, he was saying he just feels so blessed and so privileged to have discovered this and to know about it and his own understanding of life and reality just multiplied you know, expanded so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for any of us doing this kind of work, we feel, wow, what a gift to us.
Right.
That we get
right.
to know about this and to help
yes.
people in this way.
I totally agree.
Wonderful.
Yeah, you know, there was
really
I've shared
exciting.
This story a few times on air, and it like my mother had on Mother's Day, she didn't pass until October of later that year, but on Mother's Day she actually went into full respiratory failure, and she was a surgical nurse. She held her nurse's license for 50 years. And so, long story short, she was either A, be on a ventilator for the rest of her life, and she was very young at 71, and or, you know, be sent home. And she said, gather my children and put me back on the vent, and then just, you know, get, you know, let the kids know that this is where I'm at. And mm-hmm. And we're scattered all over the country. And so
uh-huh.
and she lived in Florida, in Central Florida. And we arrive at the hospital. I ride with her in the ambulance on the way home. And, you know, we're just, you know, just gabbing and as much as she can. And so she's back in her room and in her bed, and I'm rubbing her feet because she has no oxygen. Her feet are just black, right? There's no blood
oh.
circulation. And so I'm massaging her feet, you know, to get some blood flow back in there. And I'm like, okay, Mom, you're the only person I'm ever going to be able to ask this question of, you know. I said, what was it like to die and be brought back? You know, you hear about, you know, the tunnel of light, you hear about the feathers,
mm-hmm.
you hear, you know, like the angel wings, you hear, you know, people
yeah.
that were with you, you know, like your parents, you know, your relatives, family members, loved ones that have gone before you. And she says to me, she said, well, I was aware that I wasn't in my body, and I was aware that the paramedics were working really hard with the paddles, trying to get my heart going. And I'm like thinking to myself, yes, if I know you, you're probably watching them just to make sure that they do it right, you know, being a surgical nurse and all. And
yeah.
And then she said the funniest thing. She said to me, she says, I realize that I had gotten fat, and I just started laughing. She couldn't believe how fat she was. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're in this place in between here and there, and all you are doing is noticing that you have gained some weight. You know, I said, are you kidding me? And I'm laughing hysterically. And she said, and then I heard, you know, and it was, you know, this telepathically, it was that she focused on things that did not matter in her life. And and this is a huge message for everybody, you know.
Oh,
and it
yeah.
wasn't just for her, and I took it to heart. And this past October, it's been 8 years since she's gone. But it was that we are here for joy and to seek more joy. It is not about, you know, doing things that you have to do. It's doing the things that you want to do, the have to get done no matter what, but make sure
yeah.
that you find, that you seek this place of joy. And that was such a poignant, beautiful, beautiful message, you know, because even in any of the regression work, I've never heard any of that, you know. And, you know, it was something that I, to this day, that is how I live my life. And
good. That's wonderful.
Yes, and then those in my family, I make sure that's how they live their life, that they come from that point first, you know, even if they got a mumble grumble about doing homework, get in that happy place first and then do your homework, you know, and you know, things like that. But just very interesting, you know.
So wonderful that you heard that from her.
Right?
Yeah. From that perspective.
I mean, it's a beautiful story. And, you know, so there really isn't, in my opinion, and I'm sure yours, there is nothing to fear with the next journey. You know?
It's, right.
This is
yes.
one journey, and then we go on to another one. And
yes.
I do want to, as we are now under 5 minutes, our 90 minutes, Barbara, went by so fast. And we didn't even get to touch on your books and crop circles and the tours. And there's so much we have yet to discuss. Will you please come back and we can
yes.
talk about the crop circles, what they mean, the tours that you do
okay.
with these crop circles and the books, and then hopefully we'll have Meet the Hybrids will be out and about, and we'll have a link on your marquee in the archive, or they can get that one. They can purchase the two books that the alien experiencers and crop circles revealed. Links to those are on the marquee. But your website is Barbara Lamb, M like Mary, F like Frank, T like Tom, .com. Barbara Lamb, MFT.com. And the website is filled with all kinds of incredible information, her credentials in bio, family counseling, hypnotherapy, ET abduction, the experiencer's book, the crop circle info, pictures, tours. Are you still doing tours, Barbara?
Well, I did them for 25 years every year in England for visiting the crop circles. And I'm at a point now where I'm not sure 100% that I'll be doing more, but I will be going over next summer, 2016, to visit crop circles. I've already had a number of requests for people who'd like to go on the tour, so I'm keeping that under consideration. That is a possibility. But
right.
For anybody who wants to visit the crop circles, that's really a unique, very special experience. And Wiltshire County, England, is probably still the best place to go for that, for seeing the new crop circles that happen every year. And the good months to go, the best months, are July and August, or anyway up until about the middle of August. And then a lot of the harvesting of the fields can be happening after that. But late June, July, and first half of August are really excellent times. So maybe on the next program we can talk more about that. I think that the crop circles are originated by or created by, laid down by other intelligences from the universe. And it's just a wondrous, fantastic thing that's been happening since the 1980s in any kind of substantial numbers. And then a few that we know about that go way back into earlier centuries even.
Right,
But the really magnificent, complex, geometrically perfect ones have all been happening in the 1980s, 1990s, and the 2000s, and are still happening.
Yes, there's some beautiful ones out there.
Oh, yeah, and it is a worldwide phenomenon. I give lectures sometimes on crop circles around the world, and it's amazing, all of the countries and even all of the states in the United States that at least occasionally have nice crop circles.
Right, Right.
That's
absolutely
all part of that higher intelligence, I think, higher consciousness, has a lot to do with what we've been talking about the
right.
extraterrestrial encounters.
Perfect.
And even the spiritual encounters.
Right. Well, Barbara, we are almost out of time. I want to thank you again for spending your evening with me here on the radio, and I really do hope that you come back again. There's still so much to learn from you, and I truly appreciate you and your time. Thank you so much for all of this.
You're so welcome. It's been
a great pleasure.
Thank you, too, and also your listening audience.
Perfect. Thank you so much, darling. I hope you have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you, and you as well.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. Well, that's it for this week's All About You show. Turn in next week when our special guest is Kimberly Nichols, who is a conceptual artist, writer, and social anthropologist. So that is also going to be a fascinating episode. All right. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. And I look forward to next week. Thank you so much.